Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, where two proud purveyors of conspiracy theories, that's myself, Kevin Barrett, and Professor Anthony Hall of the University of Lethbridge, every week break down the headlines to show you what's really going on in the world. And there's a lot going on in the world. I won't bore you by begging for money because we did meet our quota once again. Thank you very much, supporters. All right, we had such a huge week here, Tony. I don't know how we're going to cover all this stuff, but let's do our best. Starting with the issue of conspiracy theories. The evil dark specter of conspiracy theories have been raising their ugly head all over the place this week as Trump heads to Dallas, as deadline looms for release of JFK files. And what happened? He heads to Dallas. What an ominous headline. The president heads to Dallas. And then we learned last night, as our next slide shows, that Trump is withholding hundreds of these files that he's mandated to release under federal law. Why? He says, quote, "I have no choice." He says, "There could be irreversible harm to national security if I release these files." He heads to Dallas and he says he has no choice. Tony, is Trump like making a hostage video here?
Donald Trump and the assassination of JFK. Of course, Donald Trump kind of comes to power riding the tail of Alex Jones and the way he spins conspiracy theories. So he is, you know, in the business, the kind of more dubious side of it that is funded by usual suspects and such. This is Trump, Alex Jones, that crowd, limited hangout, play on Islamophobia, and JFK going right back into Damona, into secret societies, into all these issues that have been discussed in considerable detail in relationship to who killed JFK, what's behind it. And now we get to the point where we could know, but of course the governments aren't in the truth business at all anymore. JFK would have liked to have taken us there.
Okay, so we have Trump goes to Dallas. Trump heads for Dallas. He gets to Dallas and he says he has no choice. He has to withhold those JFK files because it could cause irreversible harm to national security if he releases them. And in our next slide, we learn why it would cause irreversible harm to national security. It could fuel conspiracy theories if JFK files showed or confirmed beyond all possible doubt, which is already confirmed, really, that this was a coup d'etat in the United States of America. The news would undermine the public's confidence in its government. And this would be terrible because then we might have to throw the bums out and get an honest government. And that really would be the end of our national security. I guess that's the reasoning. What do you think, Tony?
Well, national security depends upon maintaining a certain group of illusions. And so it would blow apart illusions, and the national security state would be discredited because, of course, the national security state is actually the enslavement state that wants to confirm and empower the most powerful and undermine and enslave the least powerful. So, yes, it is a threat to the way national security has been constructed as essentially a system of rule so that illusions are maintained to keep the power of the most powerful clique in the world.
And so the ruling establishment is really worried. Ted Cruz is worried that maybe his dad was part of the assassination, as Donald Trump suggested. And here we have another worried guy here, George W. Bush, son of H.W. Bush, who was apparently an active player in the Kennedy assassination. And George W. Bush was perhaps a sidelined player in 9/11. He's really worried about conspiracy theories, and he should be, because he could end up dangling by the end of a rope if the truth about these crimes of the deep state ever come to light and are prosecuted.
When I saw this short video of Bush 43, not his father, 41, the 43rd president of the United States, he was reading a script, and I didn't really feel he understood very much of what was in the script. He was mouthing words. But there were interesting words like nationalism becomes nativism. I think that is a fairly good way to describe some aspects of what's going on. Of course, nativism, what about the original peoples? This is not a big issue in the United States, except when you have a controversy over pipelines and such. Other phrases like we're in a time of casual cruelty. This is part of this mounting, this alert, cry wolf, you know, the conspiracy theorists are coming. These false narratives, which actually have a lot of truth in them, much more than the mainstream media, are threatening us. And there's Bush reading out his assigned text.
And how about this next headline, Tony? Check this out. This is in the Chicago Tribune, one of our biggest daily papers. It's probably right after the New York Times, Washington Post, and up there with the LA Times in the top four. Maybe I left somebody out. I can't think of who. Anyway, this column, what a headline. Too many false flags revealed in conspiracy theories. I mean, talk about a Freudian slip.
The person who wrote this headline seems a little bit confused. The author here makes it very clear, Jerry Davich, that conspiracy theories extend to the weird people who think that JFK was assassinated by a cabal, by a complex network of operatives seeking to achieve many goals, including keeping the way clear for Dimona, the nuclear installation in Israel, to be developed. Weird conspiracy theorists say that kind of thing, and weird conspiracy theorists talk about 9/11, but he is sort of saying that some more minor conspiracy theories might have a grain of truth in them and
not just minor ones, Tony, because he talks about, you know, talking with his conspiracy theorist friend, and today everybody has a conspiracy theorist friend or uncle or, you know, whatever. And this guy said, look at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So Jerry goes and looks at the AE911truth.org website and is very impressed. He says that, I forget exactly what he says, I don't have it in front of me, but he basically says these thousands of architects and engineers are making some very interesting and perhaps valid points about the way that, you know, the science tells us these buildings look like they came down from demolition, not from office fires caused by jet fuel and airline crashes. So he's basically validating the work of AE911 Truth. And it's interesting that they put this picture of the remains of the Trade Center to illustrate the column.
When does a conspiracy theorist become a whistleblower? Actually, I'm thinking that what we're doing is largely whistleblowing. And the fact that 9/11 is a bunch of constructed illusions that hold in place a particular relationship of power, a particular set of power relationships. That is, in fact, a whistleblowing contribution to point that out. So much of what we do is whistleblowing, but of course, whistleblowing implies a certain degree of respectability that you deny to those who you smear as, and it is a smear, conspiracy theorists. But of course, we embrace the term because we need theories and people do conspire, and there's nothing wrong with that phrase. It's just what it invokes in people's mind, the way it's been spun and weaponized and torqued by the usual suspects.
Well, some of the citizens' investigations seem to me that they go off track and they get a little crazy and make accusations against people who are not public figures that shouldn't be made, especially in obnoxious form. We're going to talk a little bit about that later with Braden Mateshka. But in the next slide, we see that this, last year's Pizzagate scandal involving Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and a long chain of people suspected of dealing with human trafficking and child pornography and things like that. I always said this needs to be investigated, but I also said that we shouldn't be making reckless accusations against non-public figures. And anyway, so we had a little, you know, back and forth on this issue. Jim Fetzer was on this show last December talking about, this was about 1 year ago that this was all breaking. And here in Wikipedia, we see that Wikipedia is basically telling us that people who think that cheese pizza is code for child pornography are just crazy conspiracy theorists, like these people demonstrating here. But in the next slide, we see that this week we had a news story from the AP, Associated Press, not InfoWars, telling us that a New Jersey corrections officer has been arrested for child porn after using the code word cheese pizza. And that's how they caught him. So Tony, you know, whatever you think about Pizzagate, and I think it needs to be investigated. I don't know whether all of the people that were accused are guilty. I doubt it, but maybe some of them are. I don't know. Anyway, the point being that the establishment, whether it's Wikipedia or the Chicago Tribune, the government, the mass media, they're all slandering people who are just trying to get at the truth about these crimes of the deep state, the crimes of the elite. Sometimes it's called elite deviance. So, you know, maybe we'll end up having to apologize to Jim Fetzer. I doubt it, but you never know.
Well, this so-called elite deviance really is a major subject. It has to be taken seriously. Robert David Steele, you know, was very outspoken and really thought in the early days of the Trump regime that if Trump had gone at that issue, he could overturn a lot of the deep state players, the people who are really controlling government. But that didn't happen. And of course, Trump himself might be subject to different types of blackmail or intimidation based on whatever they have on tape. I'd say, you know, the high profile place to start going into this is Jeffrey Epstein and, you know, the Lolita Express and the...
Why is he walking around free?
The tie-in between the Clinton Foundation and, you know, Podesta worked for Clinton and you know, what was going on in Lolita Island and money from this entrepreneur of intimidation through blackmail by filming people.
Well, maybe this is why Trump has no choice but to withhold the JFK files, because Trump is reputed to have, you know, he's a super rich guy running in a really decadent circle, and there are people who have accused him under oath or in court and stuff of a lot of these crimes.
Anyway, there are ways into it that seem to me much more clearly set out than Pizzagate. The Jeffrey Epstein matter, you know, with Dershowitz being his lawyer and just the list of people who are involved in it. In Britain, you know, this has been a major subject. It's probably most rife in Britain, which has boarding schools and all, you know, people, young children are sort of put in strange, not really family situations as they grow up, especially the elites, especially the aristocrats. So, you know, there's been a lot of revelation, cover up by the BBC. The BBC becomes a theater for all
Jimmy Savile has been convicted posthumously, but they never go after anybody who's still alive.
And the royals seem to, you know, some members of the royals seem to be attracted to this kind of thing.
Former prime minister is totally now busted and convicted, essentially, of this. But they never go after the people who are still alive and still doing it.
Well, this has to be, we have to persist on this. Dershowitz's role in this as lawyer for Jeffrey Epstein, it seems to me that's a really critical place to look.
Okay, I'm with you there, Tony. So moving on to the next category, the war on freedom. Oh, actually, sorry. This is the last story in the previous category, the conspiracy theories category. This is my own contribution to conspiracy theory, a short piece rebutting one of the long list of these stupid stories by psychologists who are trying to scare up grant money by telling us that people believe conspiracy theories because they are, well, they have this psychological quirk and they have that psychological quirk, and it has nothing to do with the facts. So don't look at the facts. I mean, that's basically what this guy is saying, and it just teed me off. So I had to write this rebuttal.
Well, this idea of psychiatrists exposing this, I mean, Michael Shermer came to the University of Lethbridge to give, get this, the Owen Holmes lecture. And he began to, put up on his slides pictures of brains and, you know, various sectors of the brain, and then talk about all these so-called conspiracy theories and link them all together as if they're a manifestation of a particular type of mental illness. And, you know, by showing pictures of brains, this is given credibility. The story we're going to do down the road here is, oh, let's send Paddock's brain to some kind of neuro specialist, and he'll tell us why he shot them. You know,
and next thing you know, Tony, they're going to cut our heads open live on False Flag Weekly News and look at our brains to try and figure out why we do this.
Yeah, and you mean as the prelude to going to the FEMA camps or the asylum or the re-education center?
Oh boy, yeah, you just can't make this stuff up. Anyway,
that's a cliche. Come on, you say that to me.
Yeah.
And that's Gordon Duff's thing anyway.
No, that's actually Jim Dean. Got a shout out to Jim there. Anyway, let's move on to the War on Freedom, which is very much linked to the War on Conspiracy Theories. How about Gulag Google escalating its blacklisting of left-wing websites? This is from the World Socialist website. More great work from them. If you have a harder and harder time Googling up my work, Tony's work, other stuff, Veterans Today, et cetera, there's a reason for that. Tony, can they really censor our modern society with this all free and open internet just by, like, totally controlling the search engines?
Seems to be happening big time, and World Socialist site is giving us, you know, weekly updates on it. I think this is something that really lends itself to citizens' investigations in different ways. You know, we need to be amassing information because there's a huge onslaught, a huge censorship, the most serious maybe in the history of United States. That's the way Chris Hedges describes it. And lo and behold, there's Chris Hedges, who we would see as sort of a gatekeeper, but nevertheless.
That's not Chris Hedges in the picture. List. That's a young person from Tibet.
Yeah, but if you actually read the article.
Yeah, right.
It gets down to that. And of course, you know, the high profile, you know, let's take Anglin's, what's it called, Daily Stormer or, off the internet, these extreme right wing, as it would so be described, sites that do hate speech and such. But actually, here's the story. It's the left wing sites that are actually being targeted and targeted in a way that you can't find them through search mechanisms. They're not necessarily being taken down altogether. And I've noticed that it's much harder to find things on False Flag Weekly News or, you know, references to the stories we do and such. So it's a huge issue. We need some new kind of search mechanism that is outside of the purview of Google and the monopolies and the cabal. You know, the internet is a work in progress, and we need our geeks, gooks, and nerds, and, you know, geniuses on the net to come up with systems that serve our agendas, not the agendas of those enslaving us from a position of extreme power.
Well, Tony, these internet monopolies should all be immediately taken over and run as public utilities, and they should be run transparently. The algorithms used by Google to search the internet are a public utility, and they should be transparent. Everybody should be able to see those algorithms. They should be 100% neutral and simply tell us what people are seeing. And then if you want to have Google Scholar with some input from the scholarly community about which are the reputable journals and such, that's fine too, or something like that. But the basic public utility of Google should be 100% transparent, and it should just tell you what people are reading. So we need to make sure that we nationalize Google. It's absolutely crucial that Google, Facebook, all of the internet giants need to be nationalized and run as public utilities. And there are more and more people saying this, including some mainstream voices. But Tony, speaking of the war on freedom, how about the war on Tony Hall? The Academic Freedom Letters mounted a stirring defense of Tony Hall. I just published this at VT. We had a couple of very, very eloquent voices defending you, Tony. Tell us about it.
Yes, defending me, but also looking at a systemic problem in our universities with University of Lethbridge, you know, up front, the case in point, but this is going on all over the place. Owen Holmes actually founded the University of Lethbridge, or he was the primary academic who drew up the original plans, scholarly plans for the university, became the first dean of arts and science, became provost and vice president academic. And he has taken a very great interest in the treatment of me by the board of governors. He says, well, actually, a university is the main part of a university is the faculty and the students. And then he calls it the trustees. The board of governors is actually the trustees. And he says, my case illustrates what happens when the trustees turn against the university, actually attack the institution that they're charged to defend and protect. And this is, you know, a pretty radical starting point for this analysis. And then, of course, Andrew Blair has come up with his letter, open letter, to Amanda Holman, the, get this, director of human rights for B'nai B'rith. And, of course, we got to know Amanda Holman's techniques.
Director of human rights abuse would be more like it.
Bringing in hate speech police in 2015 when we were in Edmonton. And so we lived through a certain, the early phase of this extreme intervention by B'nai B'rith Canada, which is the, Canadian arm of Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, deeply involved with police. Anyway, go
ahead. Yeah, Owen Holmes correctly called them extremists. He said, you're being witch hunted by extremists.
Yeah, and he calls them, a very powerful lobby network. I mean, the point is they are a political lobby, and political lobbies shouldn't be in the business of telling universities, what to study, how to study it, who can study it, what they can say, what they can't say. That's what seemed to be on display in my case. But it's a phenomena that goes beyond any, single lobby group. It's a systemic affair these days.
Well, congratulations, Tony, for service above and beyond the call of duty to academic freedom. And we do hope that your case will evolve in a positive direction. There are some indications that may happen. Well, let's move on to
there was a court case. The trustees of the university, the Board of Governors, lost. The Faculty Association won. The university changed its lawyers. And there has been a significant change of attitude. So it's possible that in the not too distant future, we might have some interesting news to report on this local story, on this story that probably the viewers of False Flag Weekly News, our little constituency, are probably among the best informed people on this subject in the world. And it's still unfolding, and maybe in a more positive way than in the past.
All right. Well, Tony, when the people who come after you are complete idiots, that always helps. That was my blessing when I was attacked by Steve Nass, the commissar of thought crimes in the Wisconsin State Legislature. Everybody at the university saw who was coming after me and said, well, maybe this 9/11 conspiracy theorist Kevin Barrett isn't so crazy after all. And they've picked a pretty stupid case against you. So it's going to blow up in their face, whether it's sooner or later. It's almost bound to happen just because there's no case. I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, it's the craziest witch hunt I've ever seen in my life.
Well, let me be a little bit moderate here and say, characterizing somebody as a complete idiot, could you hold back and find an adjective that is,
Steve Nass, for sure. Steve Nass, definitely.
Extreme idiot, an over-the-top idiot. But
Okay. Enough verbal abuse. Let's go to Russia. Okay, here we are in Russia. And once again, talking about being, this is what the Saker tells us later on. We're going to get to that the Russian propaganda really is just exposing the idiocy and lies coming out of the West. Anyway, here's Andrei Volchek on my show pointing out that we're in the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, which Andrei champions. And moving on to the next slide.
Oh, can't we just do
this? No, we got to move along. We're a little behind already. Here we have this New York Times spearheading the witch hunt on Russia. The evil Bolshevik menace is back, only now it's Putin and they're not Bolsheviks. Maybe they're too Christian. I don't know. In any case, they hate Russia. Russia is guilty of publicizing Western dissidents, people like us pretty much. And now they've gone so far as to, in the next slide, publish a list of names of RT guests, just like Joe McCarthy had. I have a list of names of communist sympathizers in the State Department. Well, here we have a list of names of people who've actually been on RT. You can't make too much. It's too much. Tony, go ahead.
Okay, well, here is a lot of information about RT, which became a very important part of the media scene, certainly in Canada and the United States and no doubt in Europe. A very interesting contribution. I see Crosstalk on RT as one of the best shows on public affairs these days. But this idea that, Trump is in bed with the Russians and the Russians conspired and they changed the course of election and all the people that were assuming Hillary Clinton would get in, including Hillary herself, are, seeing this and characterizing this as a Russian conspiracy. So, things have to be changed and RT becomes a kind of point, a major point on this. Why is Russia, where does Russia get this rap, you know, that U.S. had decent relations with Russia, I assume in the days of the Tsar, but not 1917, 100 years ago this year, came something called the Soviet, you know, the Soviet Revolution, the Communist Revolution, and Karl Marx was elevated, and, you know, there's all kinds of conspiracy theorists see, you know, this is not what it is made to seem, but it's very interesting. In 1917, also, that is the year of the Balfour Declaration, 100 years ago. So the Balfour Declaration starts to identify this new nationality, the Jewish homeland, that will become the Jewish state of Israel after World War II. And it's introducing this new kind of nationality at the same time that the Russian Revolution is saying, no nations, you know, workers of the world unite. Nations and nationalism is a conspiracy of the ruling class, you know, to keep the workers divided and all of that. So, you know, let's do away with nations and let's have a internationalism. I mean, that's the idea of the Soviet Revolution, you know, the polemic or the idealistic view that was generated.
That's Andre's view.
Those two events in 1917 are very interesting. And of course, you know, 1967 was a hell of a year, the Summer of Love. University of Lethbridge was founded. We're in the 50th anniversary year.
Tony, stop free associating.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Okay. I hate to cut off your free association here.
Okay.
But, yeah. So in this slide, we see a terrible crime of RT. Look at this ad that RT published. This is their conspiratorial advertisements about the Iraq War, according to the witch hunt led by EuropeanValues.net, which is funded by Soros and Western governments. And so here we have RT telling us, you know, 141,000 civilian deaths in Iraq, which is grossly underestimated, actually, is what happens when there's no second opinion. So, you know, how can anybody tell us that RT is doing a terrible job by advertising like this, that this is conspiratorial? Good grief. It's actually understated. Yes, it's an effective advertisement, but, you know, anyway, so this illustrates once again the Saker's point. The next slide, we see that the Saker, in analyzing Russian counter-propaganda methods, points out that sometimes truth is the best propaganda. That is, when the enemy is lying his whatever off, has no compunction about the most extreme lies, is trying to take over the world, committing aggression everywhere, murdering millions of people, and conspiring, left, right, and center. All you have to do is tell the truth, and you've got really good counter-propaganda. Just let them give us their case, and Russian TV does. It brings on anti-Russian people all the time, and they make fools of themselves, like when they say that Pokemon is a Russian agent.
Well, to use all of this American military muscle around the world, there is a little matter that the citizens of the United States have to go along with it to some extent. So ironically, it's because there is some degree of democracy that you have this sort of propaganda approach, because you have to get the people, your domestic population, to go along with these things. So what Russia today does, of course, is take this domestic propaganda fed to Americans and then show it to people elsewhere in the world. And it kind of looks ridiculous, and it's not good advertising for the United States to be seen. You know, this is how contemptuously the big media in that country treat their own domestic populations, and how they're fed misleading, passing as information, but it's not really information, and they're spun, and they're made to feel fearful, and their, you know, their hopes and dreams and fears are exploited against them in all kinds of different ways. This is a good subject for a counter propaganda, and the Saker describes this.
And so, in a sense, what we're doing here, Tony, is counter propaganda, but we're not representing any particular government, power, party, ideological position. We're just trying to show you when the hegemon is lying to you and propagandizing you. And isn't it interesting, Tony, that the crime of RT, as described by this huge, you know, European values, you know, pushback project, is counter-hegemonic propaganda. It's bad to be counter-hegemonic, according to these people. That means that hegemony is good, and you want only one message drilled into the public's brain incessantly by the hegemon. That's what they're telling us.
Well, when you say we don't really do that, promote our agenda, well, Dr. Barrett, some might accuse you of promoting the concept of a world caliphate and, you know, being extremely positive to the idea of a Muslim.
I want to run for caliph. Running for caliph.
So part of my job, as you know, is to kind of keep you a little bit honest on that score. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call you out a little bit. You know, you might be accused of being a bit of a propagandist for a particular
Everything I do is designed to usher in Sharia law in America. I can't wait to start lopping off people's limbs. Okay, moving on to state-sponsored terrorism.
That's not fair, Ball.
This is the kind of crap I hear from people. There's this brainwashed Christian Zionist segment of the population that actually believes that, you know, these Saudi misinterpretations of Sharia are going to be imposed on the United States. I mean, this is the most insane thing. Anyway, but we do have to get to our stories.
We need to be very clear about the Islamophobia, the mass murder of Muslims, the poisoning of the mental environment by the dominant propaganda, you know, so well embodied by the people around Donald Trump and Alex Jones. And so when I point this out to you, Kevin, my conspiracy theory vis-a-vis Kevin Barrett's picture of a future world, I moderate it with I'm an enemy of Islamophobia. I want to see better understanding and appreciation across the world between all different kinds of people.
Well, Tony, I'm serving God, and one of the highest levels of God, you know, the greatest names of God is Al-Haq, the truth or reality with a capital R. That's what I'm serving. And if it, you know, if they're the people running the holy places and, you know, in Mecca and Medina happen to be corrupt creeps, I will say so, despite the fact that I'm supposedly affiliated with their nominal religion. And likewise, if somebody is accusing someone of being a crisis actor, and I don't think they are, I may be a conspiracy theorist, but I will defend that person who's being accused. I'm just looking for the truth. That is my agenda. And the only reason that I can survive doing this is because, you know, there are enough people that are interested in helping somebody do that. I'm not trying to push any political project.
You have a great deal of tenacity in bringing out truth on many subjects. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tony. All right, moving on to state manufactured terrorism. We are a little behind. Let's kind of click through some of these. The FBI is plotting to bomb the Dolphin Mall in Florida. They've entrapped a patsy. Okay, that's enough said about that one. How about the undercover agent inciting the Berlin Christmas market attack? Really good piece from World Socialist website. No wonder Google is trying to make them disappear from the rankings. Comments on those two, Tony?
Yes, well, this is all part of this phenomena, how Gladio B, as you call it, unfolds. You know, there are setups. I mean, the FBI, the RCMP in Canada, there is a whole big industry of people devoted to creating the appearance of spontaneous indigenous terrorist events that are in fact concocted and set up, and people are looked for and identified who can be exploited and whatnot. In Canada, and you know, Aronson writes the book Terror Factory and pretty well lays it out in very simple terms. In Canada, the Nuttall and Cordy case, you know, a judge looked at this entrapment by hundreds of RCMP playing off these folks, the Zahaf Bibo, the shooter event in October of 2014. You know, we have it in Canada. It's all over the world. Here is episodes and illustrations of it in other contexts.
Okay. And speaking of state-sponsored terrorism, how about over in Somalia, this huge bombing that essentially was a gift to the U.S. attempt to continue to destabilize and occupy Somalia. Who gains from this? The usual suspects. And here we had an interesting article casting some light on, you know, how it may have been arranged. We had a really good comment here from a viewer who is also suspicious.
Somalia is a big country. No doubt it's ethnically diverse. Do you have any sense of those who want to do divide and conquer and break up countries in that area, what kind of balkanization plans are in store for Somalia?
Well, Somalia has been maintained as a failed state by, again, the usual suspects. There's a whole Cold War backstory But the only time it was actually starting to stabilize was under the Islamic Courts Union, an Islamist government, which, of course, was hostile to the Zionists and hostile to U.S. imperialist plans to dominate the Middle East and Africa. And, of course, Somalia is geostrategically critically important. It's right there on the Horn of Africa. So guess what? Well, the U.S. and the Zionists had their patsies in Ethiopia that they own. Invade and bust up Somalia and destroy that period of stability. So yeah, they're maintaining a totally destabilized country and fighting the people who could bring it together. That is the Islamists.
And I suppose Libya is a kind of governmentless society as well. And these areas where you just have sort of chaos and essentially ruled by gangs and competing gangs, this probably has its own role in a geopolitical vision, the horror vision.
Yeah, we could go on and on about that. Of course, there've been revelations of actually official U.S. documents pointing out that the Thierry Meyssan says they're going to divide the world between the stable part, which is the U.S., Europe, and Japan, and so on, and the rest of the world's going to be smashed up so we can loot their resources. Let's move on to Las Vegas. We have a lot of Las Vegas stories, Tony. We have the National Review, a very mainstream opinion journal, pointing out that the shooting in Las Vegas is very, very, very strange, pointing out many of the same things that I was pointing out just minutes after it happened, well, maybe hours. And then we have a smoking gun. Next slide. Look at this. The FBI seized the video from the Tropicana Hotel, the security video, that would have shown exactly what happened. The FBI was doing this during the shooting. That means right at the beginning of the timeline. That means that the FBI had this total paramilitary team seizing these videos to make sure nobody would ever see what really happened while the shooting was going on, an hour before any authorities were able to breach Paddock's room. This could be the smoking gun, just like the FBI grabbing those Pentagon videos minutes after the Pentagon was hit on 9/11. What do you think, Tony?
Do you want to do a couple more stories?
And yeah, then sure. Yeah. Okay, now we have the no conceivable motive. Why would Paddock do this? The only real motive you can come up with is a Gladio strategy of tension kind of thing. So it must be Paddock's brain. So now they're pathologizing nuts like Paddock in the same way they are pathologizing the so-called conspiracy theorists, and it's equally vacuous in both cases. In the next slide, we have Bruce Paddock, the brother of the Las Vegas Patsy, arrested for child porn. That's interesting. You know, both of these Paddocks seem to move in a very interesting circle, the circle of the deep state. We have a report that the Paddock removed his hard drive from his laptop in the next slide. This is on Fox. Not Veterans Today or anything like that. So Tony, it seems like the reasons to question the official version of the Las Vegas shooting just keep coming.
Yes. Yeah, so let's leave it at this slide being up. This is a person called Aaron Cohen, a counterterrorism expert in the United States and Israel, and a kind of show business guy. And the way he talks about Paddock raises my suspicion. So I'm going to declare myself to be one of the key issues in how you interpret this Las Vegas event is, do you think Paddock actually shot there, you know, that he was actually the shooter, or is he some of his body sort of wheeled in and it's all set up? So my intuition with some, you know, informed judgment, but I can't declare definitively, is that Paddock is not the shooter at all. Mm-hmm. And that Paddock is a kind of creation. And you see this Aaron Cohen trying to say, you know, well, just take your time because we, you know, the counter-terrorist experts who actually dabble in a little bit of show business here and there, and actually, you know, training police in Israel to look into these kind of things. This is Aaron Cohen, you know, is involved in all these kind of things. He's kind of an entrepreneur of this type of work. And so there he is, you know, just sticking to the story, Paddock, sending
Lee
the
Harvey
brain.
Paddock.
Sending the brain to be, you know, analyzed by some great expert who's going to look at the chemicals in the brain and say, aha, we've got this, you know, we've got the solution. He's
now
a conspiracy
we know why he did
theorist.
It.
He's one of those mentally ill, weirdo conspiracy theorists. And we have, you know, the the top officials in the neuroscience telling us this interpretation. So this to me is there's so much manipulation to an investment of the kind of most sordid kind of tainted political capital into this analysis of Paddock as the sole shooter, that I'm thinking Paddock is probably not at all involved in the actual event, that it's it is multiple shooters from different angles, that there's many dimensions to this story, and Paddock is made to be the center of it, but it's just a deception. Look elsewhere for how it
really I agree completely. He's Lee Harvey Paddock, and like Lee Harvey Oswald was photographed outside the book depository watching the parade. I'm pretty sure Paddock was probably, you know, totally innocent one way or another, clearly a patsy, and it wasn't him who took the hard drive from his laptop, obviously.
Oh yeah, and there's that one too.
Anyway, and moving on. So Tony, I'm suspicious of everything, but I think we have to be really gentle and careful and thoughtful when we talk about people who are not public figures, ordinary folks like Braden Metejka. Here he is with his girlfriend. There are these YouTubes. You gave us one for a show a few weeks ago that question his bullet wound. Well, Tony, I talked to Braden. I talked to his boss. I talked to a coworker. I talked to his dad. They sure sound like normal people over in Lake Country, British Columbia. And then I got, I asked a couple of physicians for reasoned statements on his wound. In our next slide, we see, I just posted this morning. This is a guy I totally trust, an emergency room physician with extensive experience in war zones, who's also very aware of 9/11 truth and these other false flag issues. And so he says that this is not implausible. This wound, it's not a bullet. It's not a large caliber bullet entry and exit for sure. It's probably some kind of shrapnel wound. It could be a BB type of thing or a very small projectile like that, but it would be what you would expect from some kind of shrapnel. On the other hand, there are some questions about it. You can't tell for sure from this photo. You can't guarantee that it looks 100% exactly like what you would expect, blah, 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 because the photo doesn't give them enough information. But there is no reason from this photo and from the other evidence that we have about Metejka to even question him, much less to accuse him, much less to give him hate stuff. And in our previous, isn't our previous slide the one that shows the Guardian story about, you know, I hope someone shoots you. This person, whether they're an actual conspiracy theorist or a COINTELPRO person impersonating a conspiracy theorist, whoever is harassing him and insulting him like this, rather than just calling him up and talking to him normally like I did, these people are giving us a bad name, Tony. I'm really a bit upset about this.
Well, maybe I'm giving us a bad name. I don't know. But I know, we kind of started this on False Flag Weekly News, and I just threw in this story because, you know, I hadn't seen this picture, for instance, but it just seemed unlikely the way he was talking, and there was no physical evidence of a head wound, and he's talking about a bullet going into his head and coming out of the head, or it could be interpreted that way. I think what this demonstrates is we need a lot more nuance and different kind of categories. This crisis actor concept, like as if you either are or you aren't, and you know, there's nothing in between. I must say, I was a little suspicious when I immediately saw he had a PayPal wall up. So he gets whatever happens to him, and there he is, and he's got $26,000 coming into PayPal because he's a victim of this kind of thing.
Well, he's doing better than False Flag Weekly News. That's
yeah.
For sure.
But the idea that you know, he's just involved in a fraud. Like, who's to say that there wasn't some kind of technology taking place to do this kind of injury to people, so that you would have, you know, crisis people feeling assaulted? You know, shrapnel is one explanation, but there could be an actual some kind of shooting device to cause people
a BB or maybe a
limited
like
kind
that,
of yeah. wound. So, but I know that, you know, there are real deaths in this matter. Like four Canadians call him a dig at Jasper. You know, the community is devastated there. You know, Klimchuk, you know, there are people who I think it's overwhelming the case that they've been actually killed. So Metejka, How do you say it?
I think it's Matejka.
Matejka. I would suggest that, you know, rather than simply saying it's either crisis actor you are or you aren't, that there are all kinds of possible variations that this false flag terrorism can, you know, it's a work in progress, and he may be the victim of, you know, some stage managed event, or at least instrument of a stage managed event, and he has no consciousness that he is, you know, been set up for this. So anyway, I'm just putting it out that we need to be nuanced in how we talk about these things.
Well, yeah, but it is a question. There is a question of crisis actor you are or you aren't. And he isn't. You know, I mean, unless somebody comes up with some very, you know, convincing evidence, we have to assume he isn't. You're innocent until proven guilty, and there's no reason to think this guy's guilty. So on that question, we have to be clear. But yeah, sure, it looks like some kind of false flag, a typical Gladio event. And did they really shoot people during Operation Gladio? Ask the survivors of the Brabant Belgium massacres in the shopping areas. Of course they do. So yeah, of course he's the victim of an event that's been choreographed and so on. But he's still a guy who got shot in Las Vegas. So, you know, whatever. Anyway,
How do you see the PayPal wall?
Well, people raise money through crowdfunding for everything these days, Tony. We do it here at False Flag Weekly News. And this guy, he's not a rich guy. I talked to the place where he works. He's like a working class guy. And, you know, a normal working class guy who got injured at Las Vegas is very likely to do that. I mean, why not? I mean, come on.
And good for you for picking up the phone and following up on it. And people were really interested in this story. It was educational to me to see how this sort of caught fire on False Flag Weekly News comment section. So keep those comments coming in, folks. And that, for all we know, had a big role in sort of leading to this condemnation that somehow people saying you're a crisis actor and condemning him, they're doing hate speech and this whole hate, you know.
No, they're doing stupid speech.
Well, anyway, speech. But they're giving an opening for this propaganda where you just invoke this term hate speech. That means we can censor you. That means you're, you know, you don't have citizens' rights. That means you can't speak because you're doing something awful. You're doing hate. And we see the people who are really experts on hate speech are often the ones deciding who's going to be designated as.
Well, that's right. And I wouldn't be surprised, Tony, if this whole thing, this wasn't sparked by False Flag Weekly News. You just picked up on a YouTube that had a lot of views. That YouTube, however, with its views, with its comments, that could be orchestrated. Somebody started seeding those comments, and, you know, the rest took off, and they used this as anti-conspiracy theory propaganda. Let's go to Iran. We only have 12 minutes left, and we've only been through a little more than half the stories. Here we have the U.S. on a collision course with Iran, says the Washington Post. We talked about that a lot last week, and yes, we did False Flag Weekly News, a special report last week. It's not in the normal location, though. People have to find that by way of my YouTube channel. Go to truthjihad.com, click on the YouTube link, and you'll find that. Anyway, next slide.
I'm going to suggest that Alan Reese is going to put that up on Radio.
He'll put it in the regular place.
Two-for-one sale this week, ladies and gentlemen. Two new False Flag Weekly News episodes. Actually, the one just hasn't been seen on No Lies Radio, but
okay. And people can also people can find it at my Patreon page. Just go to Patreon, Patreon, and look for my name. Dr. Kevin Barrett is what I am there. Anyway, here we are in Iran. This is this crazy attempt to blame Iran for 9/11. Kristen Bridweiser slices and dices it, even though she's kind of sort of accepting some of the official story. She talks about hijackers, not alleged hijackers, but it's still an interesting piece. And of course, that Hezbollah bandana that was planted in Shanksville may be resurrected now to try to blame Iran.
Yeah, I mean, we've had one real trial on 9/11 with victims' families going against Iran, and like Iran is the enemy of Al-Qaeda and Daesh and ISIL, the type of Islamic terrorists who were told supposedly did 9/11, etc. This is not a sane approach to 9/11 to start looking through Iran. It's part of the buildup, the Likudnik instigated buildup to war with Iran that we're presently seeing.
James Petras just did a great piece on that
too. Traction. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that. Anyway, I'm going to talk to James Petras about that great new piece. Anyway, war on Trump news. Clinton team and the Democrats bankrolled the dirty dossier, supposedly featuring Trump urinating on Obama's bed or something like that with a bunch of whatever, weird Russian prostitutes. Well, that was all paid for by Hillary. And Jimmy Carter in the next slide says that he didn't vote for Hillary in the primary. He voted for Bernie Sanders, just like I did. And basically he throws cold water on this establishment attempt to lynch Trump and to elevate Hillary.
Let's just keep this page here, this photograph of these former U.S. presidents. The only one in that sequence who isn't there is Ronald Reagan, who's passed away. But isn't it an interesting demonstration that in the United States, the person, you know, ordering all the murders of this group and that group and doing the deep state things, you know, they all end up made in the shade, you know, no criminal charges. There they are, the team, and all looking rather healthy and well protected. U.S. is pretty good about protecting those at the top.
It sure is. And they're protecting them from war crimes charges relating to many wars, including, next slide, the war in Afghanistan, where the Phoenix Program 2.0, Phoenix being the genocidal program against Vietnamese villagers, is being unleashed on Afghanistan. So that's pretty ugly news. And in the next slide, we see that Bowie Bergdahl, the soldier accused of doing something wrong by quote-unquote deserting this genocidal criminal war of aggression in Afghanistan, should be given the Medal of Honor. He is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, heroes in American history, if indeed his reason for stepping out of that criminal war was his understanding that he was participating in aggression, the supreme war crime.
And he mentions that when he was a captive of the Taliban, they were kind of decent to him and actually talked to him as a human and explained to him real stuff that was happening around him. Whereas when he is under the auspices of the U.S. military, people don't tell you what's going on and they lie to you. And so this is taken as the entry point to this story, the way the mainstream covers it, that, oh, this crazy kook here says that the Taliban are actually more honest than.
You know, that's what everybody says. Who's, you know, that's what. What's her name from the UK? I'm forgetting her name. The journalist who was captured by the Taliban after she snuck into Afghanistan right around the time of the U.S. invasion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, a lot of people say the Taliban are gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Anyway, let's move on to Jewish state. That is the Jewish equivalent of Islamic State, otherwise known as the Zionist entity occupying Palestine. They're also occupying Houston. You can't get flood relief unless you promise never to boycott Israel. Talk about Zionist arrogance and chutzpah. This is carrying it a little too far, don't you think?
I mean, it's actually written into the policy that those who, if you're going to get money for flood relief, you can't have a position on BDS. You know, our friend in Jasper has ideas and positions, and suddenly you can't be a member of the Environmental Association and the Fiddlers Association. And
if you have
Canadian
any ideas,
Legion.
you can't teach at the University of Lethbridge, Tony. And well, maybe you can. We'll find out.
If you offend this particular lobby, you know, there's no limits to the recriminations that will be put on you, oftentimes just by citizens who are so torqued and spun that they think they're doing something, you know, positive for humanity by transforming this or that agency into a thought policing agency for
speaking of Zionist thought police, Tony, here we have Palestinian guy arrested for a Facebook translation error. He said good morning in Arabic, and the translation in Hebrew came up as attack them. So I guess that artificial intelligence over in Israel isn't working so well. And so they busted him, but it's all been sorted out now. I hope he wasn't too badly tortured for saying good morning. And then we have this new website, Tony, Forward March, saying that Islamic extremism is not the real problem. The real problem is Jewish extremism. Are we allowed to say that? Everybody says Islamic extremism. Are we allowed to even acknowledge that there is such a thing as Jewish extremism? I would think we should be.
Well, this group of journalists here is a very interesting array of supposedly the authors of this Forward March article, including Shabazz, which was the name of Malcolm X, including Claire Hoy, including Ostrovsky, you know, the Mossad agent who went public. And, you know, it's a strange group of authors. They seem to be Canadian-based, many of them. And the idea of this article is they make a distinction between neo-Nazism and National Socialism in Germany. And basically, they're saying this neo-Nazism is an instrument of Israeli manipulation, and they have a lot of neo-Nazi types in Israel. And there is supporting, for instance, the Jewish, the English Defense League, in Great Britain, and it is a kind of neo-Nazi approach, which is sort of head-banging and, you know, being useful for creation of illusion and polarization and, you know, divisions of different sorts. So I find that a very interesting analysis, and of course puts it in this history in a different light than what we usually get.
Well, it does. And speaking of seeing things in a different light, how about our next story as we enter the odds and ends category? I did an interview with Peter Myers about the Harvey Weinstein affair, as it were. And the one part that nobody ever talks about was mentioned by a story in, not the Forward, it was a different Jewish publication.
The Tablet
magazine. Yeah, yeah. So it's basically pointing out that Harvey Weinstein was working out his weird psychological problem or hatred of non-Jewish people by degrading non-Jewish women. All of his victims practically were non-Jewish. And so Tablet explained that. So getting into this sort of cultural Jewish versus Christian kind of thing that's lurking in the shadows of this Weinstein affair is really interesting. And Peter Myers got into that. And then I'm going to be talking about that on the radio show.
Can I get in on that? No.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah. Well, the article is called, and this is me citing the Tablet article, not me saying my own words, the specifically Jewy perviness of Harvey Weinstein. What an interesting title for a magazine or a website written primarily by Jews for Jews in that context. And yes, there is this view that, what are his fantasies? And his fantasies are getting some kind of revenge on sheikhs, and now he's in a position to seduce sheikhs, non-Jewish women. Anyway, it's a very kind of strange cultural analysis going on here, and it really does lend itself to the kind of broader discussion which you have had, Kevin.
Okay, and that will be a topic of debate on tonight's radio show. We have a critic of the Peter Myers approach. Peter Myers is a critic of what he would consider a certain element of the Jewish community's influence on Western popular culture. He's a little bit on the same line as Michael Jones, but we're going to have a guest tonight on my radio show that who will argue against that. He's from a Jewish background himself, who thinks that Peter Myers is barking up the wrong tree. So that's going to be an interesting show tonight. People can find that by way of my website, truthjihad.com. Click on the radio link.
You mean the breakdown of Christian family values, Kevin, might have something to do with Hollywood? And
well, we will debate that tonight.
Okay,
we got to whip through these stories. We have exactly 1 minute left to do five stories. So let's see if we can do it. Okay, Tillerson says Iraq's Shia militia must go home. Wait a minute, maybe Iraq is saying Tillerson, maybe America needs to go home.
Yes, those Iraqis, what are they doing in Iraq?
Yeah, really, go home Iraqis, go home somewhere
and,
else.
Of course, we're beneath staying. It all is that the Islamic Republic of Iran has proxy armies and friendly allied forces through that area. And that makes Tillerson nervous.
Well, they're probably friendlier to Iran than they are to the United States. Why would that be? Because the United States destroyed Iraq, maybe. Anyway, how about Venezuela, where Chavismo is in triumph? They won the regional elections. The other side has not a leg to stand on, basically nothing to say. Bravo to the heirs of Hugo Chavez.
Viva Hugo Chavez.
Viva Chavez. Okay, good comment, Tony. That was terse, succinct, said a lot with very few words and so on and so forth. Okay, for moving change, on to Hollywood.
As an exception.
You submitted this story, Tony. Extreme weather alert. We have a geostorm, a movie called Geostorm that I never heard of because it was such a box office flop. But Tony thinks it's important. Why is it important, Tony?
Well, it's interesting that it's a box office flop. It's lost $100 million. No, just give me a chance here. And but the plot of the – it's basically a pro-geoengineering story. So there's all of this geoengineering up in space that the climate is being controlled. We're seeing a very intelligent group of highly sophisticated technocrats, you know, running the climate of the Earth. And then some Darth Vader, some bad guy, gets hold of the codes, and he's going to create the basis for a geostorm. All the storms of the world will combine and destroy the planet.
A perfect storm.
Yeah, but you know, the interesting thing is, as you're watching all of this, the assumption is that's a good thing to put stuff up in space and control the weather. That's what we should be doing. That's what intelligent, wise people do. And we know geoengineering isn't just a prospect in the future, or HAARP isn't a that, you know, our climate is being engineered in different ways. And this is in the present tense, and it's been going on for a long time. So here is Hollywood sort of selling us, you know, an extension of this technology. But then somebody gets the code, and suddenly we're in the realm of IA, artificial intelligence. And we see that, you know, the whole world is dependent upon who gets the code for this and who gets the code for that. And this IA world, this artificial intelligence world coming up, this is a nightmare, man. This is, you know, the disempowerment of humanity and losing our agency. And we cannot be lured into this. So it sort of gives the downside of IA and the upside of weather modification. And it's interesting in that respect, and the fact that people don't want to go and see it.
I would agree with them on part of it. You know, I'm with them hating IA, but I'm not a big fan of geoengineering. Anyway, Ingrid Zundel just passed away not long after her husband Ernst, and whatever you may think about their ideas, and I don't agree with all of them, but I'm not sure they're wrong about everything either. You have to admit that these people suffered under horrendous persecution for upholding free speech and free inquiry.
This was obviously the loves of their lives. They found a great deal of friendship and solace in working together. And RIP, both of you.
Okay. Well, maybe they're in Jannah, the paradise as we Muslims see it. Or maybe they're in the big UFO up in the sky. You know, God's universe is great, and maybe paradise can manifest in different ways. They were into UFOs. Ernst, you know, I said I wasn't on the same page with them on many things, and I didn't understand their UFOs under the South Pole thing. But, hey, what do I know? Anyway, we just got this news from the former manager of the Department of Defense Aerospace Threat Program that UFOs are real. Whether the Air Force exists is another question.
Well, so, a former defense minister in Canada, Paul Hellyer, has been talking about this as being real. You know, there's some very influential, well-grounded people who talk about these programs and how things are being hidden from us. I've done a class on this subject. I actually introduced it into my university curriculum at the University of Lethbridge, and I just simply called it Worthy of Your Consideration. I'm not saying this is the case. I'm not saying, but Disney did a full story on extraterrestrials coming to the Earth after the blowing up of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They don't like, supposedly in the larger universe, atomic ignitions. It affects other realms, so we're told. Anyway, how we're going to deal with this story? I mean, I myself was condemning Robert David Steele just recently when he said, you know, well, we're sending sex slave kids up to Mars and you know, that seems pretty extraordinary. But, you know, on the other hand, this is only the local solar system. You know, is it, if there is communication, it goes far beyond that. I think we have to deal with this. We have to address this. I'm not sure how.
Okay. Well, we'll have a week to think about it, and then we'll be back next week. Assuming that we haven't been kidnapped by ETs or other malevolent forces. So inshallah, see you then. I'm Kevin Barrett with Tony Hall. Take care and God bless. Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, where two proud purveyors of conspiracy theories, that's myself, Kevin Barrett, and Professor Anthony Hall of the University of Lethbridge, every week break down the headlines to show you what's really going on in the world. And there's a lot going on in the world. I won't bore you by begging for money because we did meet our quota once again. Thank you very much, supporters. All right, we had such a huge week here, Tony. I don't know how we're going to cover all this stuff, but let's do our best. Starting with the issue of conspiracy theories. The evil dark specter of conspiracy theories have been raising their ugly head all over the place this week as Trump heads to Dallas as deadline looms for release of JFK files. And what happened? He heads to Dallas. What an ominous headline. The president heads to Dallas. And then we learned last night, as our next slide shows, that Trump is withholding hundreds of these files that he's mandated to release under federal law. Why? He says, quote, "I have no choice." He says, "There could be irreversible harm to national security if I release these files." He heads to Dallas and he says he has no choice. Tony, is Trump like making a hostage video here?
Donald Trump and the assassination of JFK. Of course, Donald Trump kind of comes to power riding the tail of Alex Jones and the way he spins conspiracy theories. So he is, in the business, the kind of more dubious side of it that is funded by usual suspects and such. This is Trump, Alex Jones, that crowd, limited hangout, play on Islamophobia, and JFK going right back into Damona, into secret societies, into all these issues that have been discussed in considerable detail in relationship to who killed JFK, what's behind it. And now we get to the point where we could know, but of course the governments aren't in the truth business at all anymore. JFK would have liked to have taken us there.
Okay, so we have Trump goes to Dallas. Trump heads for Dallas. He gets to Dallas and he says he has no choice. He has to withhold those JFK files because it could cause irreversible harm to national security if he releases them. And in our next slide, we learn why it would cause irreversible harm to national security. It could fuel conspiracy theories if JFK files showed or confirmed beyond all possible doubt, which is already confirmed, really, that this was a coup d'etat in the United States of America. The news would undermine the public's confidence in its government. And this would be terrible because then we might have to throw the bums out and get an honest government. And that really would be the end of our national security. I guess that's the reasoning. What do you think, Tony?
Well, national security depends upon maintaining a certain group of illusions. And so it would blow apart illusions. And the national security state would be discredited because, of course, the national security state is actually the enslavement state that wants to confirm and empower the most powerful and undermine and enslave the least powerful. So, yes, it is a threat to the way national security has been constructed as essentially a system of rule so that illusions are maintained to keep the power of the most powerful clique in the world.
And so the ruling establishment is really worried. Ted Cruz is worried that maybe his dad was part of the assassination, as Donald Trump suggested. And here we have another worried guy here, George W. Bush, son of H.W. Bush, who was apparently an active player in the Kennedy assassination. And George W. Bush was perhaps a sidelined player in 9/11. He's really worried about conspiracy theories, and he should be because he could end up dangling by the end of a rope if the truth about these crimes of the deep state ever come to light and are prosecuted.
When I saw this short video of Bush 43, not his father, 41, the 43rd president of the United States, he was reading a script, and I didn't really feel he understood very much of what was in the script. He was mouthing words. But there were interesting words like nationalism becomes nativism. I think that is a fairly good way to describe some aspects of what's going on. Of course, nativism, what about the original peoples? This is not a big issue in the United States, except when you have a controversy over pipelines and such. Other phrases like we're in a time of casual cruelty. This is part of this mounting, this alert, cry wolf, you know, the conspiracy theorists are coming. These false narratives, which actually have a lot of truth in them, much more than the mainstream media, are threatening us. And there's Bush reading out his assigned text.
And how about this next headline, Tony? Check this out. This is in the Chicago Tribune, one of our biggest daily papers. It's probably right after the New York Times, Washington Post, and up there with the LA Times in the top four. Maybe I left somebody out. I can't think of who. Anyway, this column, what a headline. Too many false flags revealed in conspiracy theories. I mean, talk about a Freudian slip.
The person who wrote this headline seems a little bit confused. The author here makes it very clear, Jerry Davich, that conspiracy theories extend to the weird people who think that JFK was assassinated by a cabal, by a complex network of operatives seeking to achieve many goals, including keeping the way clear for Dimona, the nuclear installation in Israel, to be developed. Weird conspiracy theorists say that kind of thing, and weird conspiracy theorists talk about 9/11, but he is sort of saying that some more minor conspiracy theories might have a grain of truth in them. And well,
not just minor ones, Tony, because he talks about, you know, talking with his conspiracy theorist friend, and today everybody has a conspiracy theorist friend or uncle or, you know, whatever. And this guy said, look at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So Jerry goes and looks at the AE911truth.org website and is very impressed. He says that, I forget exactly what he says, I don't have it in front of me, but he basically says these thousands of architects and engineers are making some very interesting and perhaps valid points about the way that, you know, the science tells us these buildings look like they came down from demolition, not from office fires caused by jet fuel and airline crashes. So he's basically validating the work of AE911 Truth. And it's interesting that they put this picture of the remains of the Trade Center to illustrate the column.
When does a conspiracy theorist become a whistleblower? Actually, I'm thinking that what we're doing is largely whistleblowing. And the fact that 9/11 is a bunch of constructed illusions that hold in place a particular relationship of power, a particular set of power relationships. That is, in fact, a whistleblowing contribution to point that out. So much of what we do is whistleblowing, but of course, whistleblowing implies a certain degree of respectability that you deny to those who you smear as, and it is a smear, conspiracy theorist. But of course, we embrace the term because we need theories and people do conspire, and there's nothing wrong with that phrase. It's just what it invokes in people's mind, the way it's been spun and weaponized and torqued by the usual suspects.
Well, some of the citizens' investigations seem to me that they go off track and they get a little crazy and make accusations against people who are not public figures that shouldn't be made, especially in obnoxious form. We're going to talk a little bit about that later with Braden Mateshka. But in the next slide, we see that this, last year's Pizzagate scandal involving Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and a long chain of people suspected of dealing with human trafficking and child pornography and things like that. I always said this needs to be investigated, but I also said that we shouldn't be making reckless accusations against non-public figures. And anyway, so we had a little, you know, back and forth on this issue. Jim Fetzer was on this show last December talking about, this was about 1 year ago that this was all breaking. And here in Wikipedia, we see that Wikipedia is basically telling us that people who think that cheese pizza is code for child pornography are just crazy conspiracy theorists, like these people demonstrating here. But in the next slide, we see that this week we had a news story from the AP, Associated Press, not InfoWars, telling us that a New Jersey corrections officer has been arrested for child porn after using the code word cheese pizza. And that's how they caught him. So, Tony, you know, whatever you think about Pizzagate, and I think it needs to be investigated. I don't know whether all of the people that were accused are guilty. I doubt it, but maybe some of them are. I don't know. Anyway, the point being that the establishment, whether it's Wikipedia or the Chicago Tribune, the government, the mass media, they're all slandering people who are just trying to get at the truth about these crimes of the deep state, the crimes of the elite. Sometimes it's called elite deviance. So, you know, maybe we'll end up having to apologize to Jim Fetzer. I doubt it, but you never know.
Well, this so-called elite deviance really is a major subject. It has to be taken seriously. Robert David Steele, you know, was very outspoken and really thought in the early days of the Trump regime that if Trump had gone at that issue, he could overturn a lot of the deep state players, the people who are really controlling government. But that didn't happen. And of course, Trump himself might be subject to different types of blackmail or intimidation based on whatever they have on tape. I'd say, you know, the high profile place to start going into this is Jeffrey Epstein and, you know, the Lolita Express and the...
Why is he walking around free?
The tie-in between the Clinton Foundation and, you know, Podesta worked for Clinton and you know, what was going on in Lolita Island and money from this entrepreneur of intimidation through blackmail by filming people.
Well, maybe this is why Trump has no choice but to withhold the JFK files, because Trump is reputed to have, you know, he's a super rich guy running in a really decadent circle, and there are people who have accused him under oath or in court and stuff of a lot of these crimes.
Anyway, there are ways into it that seem to be much more clearly set out than Pizzagate. The Jeffrey Epstein matter, you know, with Dershowitz being his lawyer and just the list of people who are involved in it. In Britain, you know, this has been a major subject. It's probably most rife in Britain, which has boarding schools and all, you know, people, young children are sort of put in strange, not really family situations as they grow up, especially the elites, especially the aristocrats. So, you know, there's been a lot of revelation, cover up by the BBC. The BBC becomes a theater for all kinds
of stuff. Jimmy Savile has been convicted posthumously, but they never go after anybody who's still alive.
And the royals seem to, you know, some members of the royals seem to be attracted to this kind of thing.
Former prime minister is totally now busted and convicted, essentially, of this. But they never go after the people who are still alive and still doing it.
Well, this has to be, we have to persist on this. Dershowitz's role in this as lawyer for Jeffrey Epstein, it seems to me that's a really critical place to look.
Okay, I'm with you there, Tony. So moving on to the next category, the war on freedom. Oh, actually, sorry, this is the last story in the previous category, the conspiracy theories category. This is my own contribution to conspiracy theory, a short piece rebutting one of the long list of these stupid stories by psychologists who are trying to scare up grant money by telling us that people believe conspiracy theories because they are, well, they have this psychological quirk and they have that psychological quirk, and it has nothing to do with the facts. So don't look at the facts. I mean, that's basically what this guy is saying, and it just teed me off, so I had to write this rebuttal.
Well, this idea of psychiatrists exposing this, I mean, Michael Shermer came to the University of Lethbridge to give, get this, the Owen Holmes lecture, and he began to put up on his slides pictures of brains and, you know, various sectors of the brain, and then talk about all these so-called conspiracy theories and link them all together as if they're a manifestation of a particular type of mental illness. And, you know, by showing pictures of brains, this is given credibility. A story we're going to do down the road here is, oh, let's send Paddock's brain to some kind of neuro specialist, and he'll tell us why he shot them. You know,
Tony, they're going to cut our heads open live on False Flag Weekly News and look at our brains to try and figure out why we do this.
Yeah, and you mean as the prelude to going to the FEMA camps or the asylum or the re-education center?
Oh, boy, yeah. You just can't make this stuff up. Anyway.
That's a cliche. Come on. You say that to me. And that's Gordon Duff's thing anyway.
No, that's actually Jim Dean. Got a shout out to Jim there. Anyway, okay. Let's move on to the war on freedom, which is very much linked to the war on conspiracy theories. How about Gulag Google escalating its blacklisting of left-wing websites? This is from the World Socialist website. More great work from them. If you have a harder and harder time Googling up my work, Tony's work, other stuff, Veterans Today, et cetera, et cetera, there's a reason for that. Tony, can they really censor our modern society with this free and open internet just by, like, totally controlling the search engines?
Seems to be happening big time, and World Socialist site is giving us, you know, weekly updates on it. I think this is something that really lends itself to citizens' investigations in different ways. We know we need to be amassing information because there's a huge onslaught, a huge censorship, the most serious maybe in the history of United States. That's the way Chris Hedges describes it. And lo and behold, there's Chris Hedges, who we would see as sort of a gatekeeper, but nevertheless.
That's not Chris Hedges in the picture. That's a young person from Tibet.
Yeah, but if you actually read the article.
Yeah, right.
it gets down to that. And of course, you know, the high profile, you know, let's take Anglin's, what's it called, Daily Stormer or, you know, off the internet, these extreme right wing, as it would so be described, sites that do hate speech and such. But actually, here's the story. It's the left wing sites that are actually being targeted and targeted in a way that you can't find them through search mechanisms. They're not necessarily being taken down altogether. And I've noticed that it's much harder to find things on False Flag Weekly News or, you know, references to the stories we do and such. So it's a huge issue. We need some new kind of search mechanism that is outside of the purview of Google and the monopolies and the cabal. You know, the internet is a work in progress, and we need our geeks, gooks, and nerds, and, you know, geniuses on the net to come up with systems that serve our agendas, not the agendas of those enslaving us from a position of extreme power.
Well, Tony, these internet monopolies should all be immediately taken over and run as public utilities, and they should be run transparently. The algorithms used by Google to search the internet are a public utility, and they should be transparent. Everybody should be able to see those algorithms. They should be 100% neutral and simply tell us what people are seeing. And then if you want to have Google Scholar with some input from the scholarly community about which are the reputable journals and such, that's fine too, or something like that. But the basic public utility of Google should be 100% transparent, and it should just tell you what people are reading. So we need to make sure that we nationalize Google. It's absolutely crucial that Google, Facebook, all of the internet giants need to be nationalized and run as public utilities, and there are more and more people saying this, including some mainstream voices. But Tony, speaking of the war on freedom, how about the war on Tony Hall? The Academic Freedom Letters mounted a stirring defense of Tony Hall. I just published this at VT. We had a couple of very, very eloquent voices defending you, Tony. Tell us about it.
Yes, defending me, but also looking at a systemic problem in our universities with University of Lethbridge, you know, up front, the case in point, but this is going on all over the place. Owen Holmes actually founded the University of Lethbridge, or he was the primary academic who drew up the original plans, scholarly plans for the university, became the first dean of arts and science, became provost and vice president academic. And he has taken a very great interest in the treatment of me by the board of governors. He says, well, actually, a university is the main part of a university is the faculty and the students. And then he calls it the trustees. The board of governors is actually the trustees. And he says, my case illustrates what happens when the trustees turn against the university, actually attack the institution that they're charged to defend and protect. And this is, you know, a pretty radical starting point for this analysis. And then, of course, Andrew Blair has come up with his letter, open letter, to Amanda Holman, the, get this, director of human rights for B'nai B'rith. And, of course, we got to know Amanda Holman's techniques.
Director of human rights abuse would be more like it.
Bringing in hate speech police in 2015 when we were in Edmonton. And so we lived through a certain, you know, the early phase of this extreme intervention by B'nai B'rith Canada, which is the, you know, Canadian arm of Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, deeply involved with police. Anyway, go
ahead. Yeah, Owen Holmes correctly called them extremists. He said, you're being witch hunted by extremists.
Yeah, and he calls them, you know, a very powerful lobby network. I mean, the point is they are a political lobby, and political lobbies shouldn't be in the business of telling universities, you know, what to study, how to study it, who can study it, what they can say, what they can't say. That's what seemed to be on display in my case. But it's a phenomena that goes beyond any, you know, single lobby group. It's a systemic affair these days.
Well, congratulations, Tony, for service above and beyond the call of duty to academic freedom. And we do hope that your case will evolve in a positive direction. There are some indications that may happen. Well, let's move on to
just to stop there. There was a court case. The trustees of the university, the Board of Governors, lost. The Faculty Association won. The university changed its lawyers, there has been a significant change of attitude. So it's possible that in the not too distant future, we might have some interesting news to report on this local story, on this story that probably the viewers of False Flag Weekly News, or our little constituency, are probably among the best informed people on this subject in the world. It's still unfolding, and maybe in a more positive way than in the past.
All right. Well, Tony, you know, when the people who come after you are complete idiots, that always helps. That was my blessing when I was attacked by Steve Nass, the commissar of thought crimes in the Wisconsin State Legislature. Everybody at the university saw who was coming after me and said, well, maybe this 9/11 conspiracy theorist Kevin Barrett isn't so crazy after all. And they've picked a pretty stupid case against you. So it's going to blow up in their face, whether it's sooner or later. It's almost bound to happen just because there's no case. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. Well, it's the craziest witch hunt I've ever seen in my life.
Well, let me be a little bit moderate here and say, characterizing somebody as a complete idiot, could you hold back and find an adjective that is, you know,
well, Steve Nass for sure. Steve Nass, definitely,
you know,
qualifies.
An extreme idiot, an over the top idiot. But
enough verbal abuse. Let's
too far. Okay,
let's go to Russia. Okay, here we are in Russia, and once again, talking about being, you know, this is what the Saker tells us later on, we're going to get to that, that the Russian propaganda really is just exposing the idiocy and lies coming out of the West. Anyway, here's Andrei Volchek on my show pointing out that we're in the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, which Andrei champions. And moving on to the next slide.
Oh, can't we just do
this? No, we gotta move along. We're a little behind already. Here we have this New York Times spearheading the witch hunt on Russia. The evil Bolshevik menace is back, only now it's Putin and they're not Bolsheviks. Maybe they're too Christian. I don't know. In any case, they hate Russia. Russia is guilty of publicizing Western dissidents, people like us pretty much. And now they've gone so far as to, in the next slide, publish a list of names of RT guests, just like Joe McCarthy had, I have a list of names of communist sympathizers in the State Department. Well, here we have a list of names of people who've actually been on RT. You can't make that.
Okay.
Just don't confuse. Okay. It's okay. It's too much. Tony, go ahead.
Okay. Well, here is a lot of information about RT, which became a very important part of the media scene, certainly in Canada and the United States, and no doubt in Europe. You know, a very interesting contribution. I see Crosstalk on RT as one of the best shows on public affairs these days. But this idea that, oh, Trump is in bed with the Russians and the Russians conspired and they changed the course of election and all the people that were assuming Hillary Clinton would get in, including Hillary herself, are, you know, seeing this and characterizing this as a Russian conspiracy. So, you know, things have to be changed and RT becomes a kind of point, a major point on this. Why is Russia, where does Russia get this rap, you know, that U.S. had decent relations with Russia, I assume in the days of the Tsar, but not 1917, 100 years ago, this year came something called the Soviet, the Soviet Revolution, the Communist Revolution, and Karl Marx was elevated, and, you know, there's all kinds of conspiracy theorists see, you know, this is not what it is made to seem, but it's very interesting. In 1917, also, that is the year of the Balfour Declaration, 100 years ago. So the Balfour Declaration starts to identify this new nationality, the Jewish homeland, that will become the Jewish state of Israel after World War II. And it's introducing this new kind of nationality at the same time that the Russian Revolution is saying, no nations, you know, workers of the world unite, nations and nationalism is a conspiracy of the ruling class, you know, to keep the workers divided and all of that. So, you know, let's do away with nations and let's have a internationalism. I mean, that's the idea of the Soviet Revolution, you know, the polemic or the idealistic view that was generated.
That's Andre's view.
Those two events in 1917 are very interesting. And of course, you know, 1967 was a hell of a year, the Summer of Love. University of Lethbridge was founded. We're in the 50th anniversary year.
Tony, stop free associating.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Okay. I hate to cut off your free association here.
Okay.
But, yeah. So in this slide, we see a terrible crime of RT. Look at this ad that RT published. Yeah, this is their conspiratorial advertisements about the Iraq War, according to the witch hunt led by EuropeanValues.net, which is funded by Soros and Western governments. And so here we have RT telling us, you know, 141,000 civilian deaths in Iraq, which is grossly underestimated, actually, is what happens when there's no second opinion. How can anybody tell us that RT is doing a terrible job by advertising like this, that this is conspiratorial? Good grief. It's actually understated. Yes, it's an effective advertisement, but, you know, anyway, so this illustrates once again the Saker's point. The next slide, we see that the Saker, in analyzing Russian counter-propaganda methods, points out that sometimes truth is the best propaganda. That is, when the enemy is lying his whatever off, has no compunction about the most extreme lies, is trying to take over the world, committing aggression everywhere, murdering millions of people, conspiring left, right, and center. All you have to do is tell the truth, and you've got really good counter propaganda. Just let them give us their case, and Russian TV does. It brings on anti-Russian people all the time, and they make fools of themselves, like when they say that Pokemon is a Russian agent.
Well, to use all of this American military muscle around the world, there is a little matter that the citizens of the United States have to go along with it to some extent. So ironically, it's because there is some degree of democracy that you have this sort of propaganda approach, because you have to get the people, your domestic population, to go along with these things. So what Russia today does, of course, is take this domestic propaganda fed to Americans and then show it to people elsewhere in the world. And it kind of looks ridiculous, and it's not good advertising for the United States to be seen. You know, this is how contemptuously the big media in that country treat their own domestic populations, and how they're fed misleading, passing as information, but it's not really information, and they're spun, and they're made to feel fearful, and their, you know, their hopes and dreams and fears are exploited against them in all kinds of different ways. This is a good subject for a counter propaganda, and the Saker describes this.
And so in a sense, what we're doing here, Tony, is counter propaganda, but we're not representing any particular government, power, party, ideological position. We're just trying to show you when the hegemon is lying to you and propagandizing you. And isn't it interesting, Tony, that the crime of RT, as described by this huge, you know, European values, you know, pushback project, is counter-hegemonic propaganda. It's bad to be counter-hegemonic, according to these people. That means that hegemony is good, and you want only one message drilled into the public's brain incessantly by the hegemon. That's what they're telling us.
Well, when you say we don't really do that to promote our agenda, well, Dr. Barrett, some might accuse you of promoting the concept of a world caliphate and, you know, being extremely positive to the idea of a Muslim
prevailing. I want to run for caliph. Running for caliph.
So part of my job, as you know, is to kind of keep you a little bit honest on that score. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call you out a little bit. You know, you might be... You might be accused of being a bit of a propagandist for a particular
Everything I do is designed to usher in Sharia law in America. I can't wait to start lopping off people's limbs. Okay, moving on to state-sponsored terrorism.
That's not fair, Ball.
This is the kind of crap I hear from people. There's this brainwashed Christian Zionist segment of the population that actually believes that, you know, these Saudi misinterpretations of Sharia are going to be imposed on the United States. I mean, this is the most insane thing. Anyway, but we do have to get through our stories.
We need to be very clear about the Islamophobia, the mass murder of Muslims, the poisoning of the mental environment by the dominant propaganda, you know, so well embodied by the people around Donald Trump and Alex Jones. And so when I point this out to you, Kevin, my conspiracy theory vis-a-vis Kevin Barrett's picture of a future world, I moderate it with I'm an enemy of Islamophobia. I want to see better understanding and appreciation across the world between all different kinds of people.
Well, Tony, I'm serving God, and one of the highest levels of God, you know, the greatest names of God is Al-Haq, the truth or reality with a capital R. That's what I'm serving. And if it, you know, if they're the people running the holy places and, you know, in Mecca and Medina happen to be corrupt creeps, I will say so, despite the fact that I'm supposedly affiliated with their nominal religion. And likewise, if somebody is accusing someone of being a crisis actor, and I don't think they are, I may be a conspiracy theorist, but I will defend that person who's being accused. I'm just looking for the truth. That is my agenda. And the only reason that I can survive doing this is because, you know, there are enough people that are interested in helping somebody do that. I'm not trying to push any political project.
You have a great deal of tenacity in bringing out truth on many subjects. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. All right, moving on to state manufactured terrorism. We are a little behind. Let's kind of click through some of these. The FBI is plotting to bomb the Dolphin Mall in Florida. They've entrapped a patsy. Okay. That's enough said about that one. How about the undercover agent inciting the Berlin Christmas market attack? A really good piece from World Socialist website. No wonder Google is trying to make them disappear from the rankings. Comments on those two, Tony?
Yes, well, this is all a part of this phenomena, how Gladio B, as you call it, unfolds. You know, there are setups. I mean, the FBI, the RCMP in Canada, there is a whole big industry of people devoted to creating the appearance of spontaneous indigenous terrorist events that are in fact concocted and set up, and people are looked for and identified who can be exploited and whatnot. In Canada, and you know, Aronson writes the book Terror Factory and pretty well lays it out in very simple terms. In Canada, the Nuttall and Cordy case, you know, a judge looked at this entrapment by hundreds of RCMP playing off these folks, the Zahaf Bibo, the shooter event in October of 2014, you know, we have it in Canada. It's all over the world. Here is episodes and illustrations of it in other contexts.
Okay. And speaking of state-sponsored terrorism, how about over in Somalia, this huge bombing that essentially was a gift to the U.S. attempt to continue to destabilize and occupy Somalia. Who gains from this? The usual suspects. And here we had an interesting article casting some light on, you know, how it may have been arranged. We had a really good comment here from a viewer who is also suspicious.
Somalia is a big country. No doubt it's ethnically diverse. Do you have any sense of those who want to do divide and conquer and break up countries in that area, what kind of balkanization plans are in store for Somalia?
Well, Somalia has been maintained as a failed state by, again, the usual suspects. There's a whole Cold War backstory, but the only time it was actually starting to stabilize was under the Islamic Courts Union, an Islamist government, which, of course, was hostile to the Zionists and hostile to U.S. imperialist plans to dominate the Middle East and Africa. And, of course, Somalia is geostrategically critically important. It's right there on the Horn of Africa. So, guess what?
Well,
the U.S. and the Zionists have had their patsies in Ethiopia that they own invade and bust up Somalia and destroy that period of stability. So, yeah, they're maintaining a totally destabilized country and fighting the people who could bring it together, that is the Islamists.
And I suppose Libya is a kind of governmentless society as well. And these areas where you just have sort of chaos and essentially ruled by gangs and competing gangs, this probably has its own role in a geopolitical vision, the horror vision.
Yeah, we could go on and on about that. Of course, there've been revelations of actually official U.S. documents pointing out that the Thierry Meyssan says they're going to divide the world between the stable part, which is the U.S., Europe, and Japan, and so on, and the rest of the world's going to be smashed up so we can loot their resources. Let's move on to Las Vegas. We have a lot of Las Vegas stories, Tony. We have the National Review, a very mainstream opinion journal, pointing out that the shooting in Las Vegas is very, very, very strange, pointing out many of the same things that I was pointing out just minutes after it happened, well, maybe hours. And then we have a smoking gun. Next slide. Look at this. The FBI seized the video from the Tropicana Hotel, a security video that would have shown exactly what happened. The FBI was doing this during the shooting. That means right at the beginning of the timeline. That means that the FBI had this total paramilitary team seizing these videos to make sure nobody would ever see what really happened while the shooting was going on, an hour before any authorities were able to breach Paddock's room. This could be the smoking gun, just like the FBI grabbing those Pentagon videos minutes after the Pentagon was hit on 9/11. What do you think, Tony?
Do you want to do a couple more stories?
And yeah, then sure. Yeah. Okay, now we have the no conceivable motive. Why would Paddock do this? The only real motive you can come up with is a Gladio strategy of tension kind of thing. So it must be Paddock's brain. So now they're pathologizing nuts like Paddock in the same way they are pathologizing the so-called conspiracy theorists, and it's equally vacuous in both cases. In the next slide, we have Bruce Paddock, the brother of the Las Vegas Patsy, arrested for child porn. That's interesting. You know, both of these Paddocks seem to move in a very interesting circle, the circle of the deep state. We have a report that the Paddock removed his hard drive from his laptop in the next slide. This is on Fox. Not Veterans Today or anything like that. So Tony, it seems like the reasons to question the official version of the Las Vegas shooting just keep coming.
Yes. Yeah, so let's leave it at this slide being up. This is a person called Aaron Cohen, a counterterrorism expert in the United States and Israel, and a kind of show business guy. And the way he talks about Paddock raises my suspicion. So I'm going to declare myself to be one of the key issues in how you interpret this Las Vegas event is, do you think Paddock actually shot there, you know, that he was actually the shooter, or is he some of his body sort of wheeled in and it's all set up? So my intuition with some, you know, informed judgment, but I can't declare definitively, is that Paddock is not the shooter at all. Mm-hmm. And that Paddock is a kind of creation. And you see this Aaron Cohen trying to say, you know, well, just take your time because we, you know, the counter-terrorist experts who actually dabble in a little bit of show business here and there, and actually, you know, training police in Israel to look into these kind of things. This is Aaron Cohen, you know, is involved in all these kind of things. He's kind of an entrepreneur of this type of work. And so there he is, you know, just sticking to the story, Paddock, 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 sending
Lee
the
Harvey
brain.
Paddock.
sending the brain to be, you know, analyzed by some great expert who's going to sort of look at the chemicals in the brain and say, aha, we've got this, you know, we've got the solution. He's now a conspiracy theorist. He's one of those mentally ill, weirdo conspiracy theorists. And we have, you know, the top officials in the neuroscience telling us this interpretation. So this to me is there's so much manipulation to an investment of the kind of most sordid kind of tainted political capital into this analysis of Paddock as the sole shooter that I'm thinking Paddock is probably not at all involved in the actual event, that it's it is multiple shooters from different angles, that there's many dimensions to this story, and Paddock is made to be the center of it, but it's just a deception. Look elsewhere for how it
really I agree completely. He's Lee Harvey Paddock, and like Lee Harvey Oswald was photographed outside the book depository watching the parade. I'm pretty sure Paddock was probably, you know, totally innocent one way or another, clearly a patsy, and it wasn't him who took the hard drive from his laptop, obviously.
Oh yeah, and there's that one too.
Anyway, and moving on. So Tony, I you know, I'm suspicious of everything, but I think we have to be really gentle and careful and thoughtful when we talk about people who are not public figures, ordinary folks like Braden Mateshka. Here he is with his girlfriend. There are these YouTubes. You gave us one for a show a few weeks ago that question his bullet wound. Well, Tony, I talked to Braden. I talked to his boss. I talked to a coworker. I talked to his dad. They sure sound like normal people over in Lake Country, British Columbia. And then I got, I asked a couple of physicians for reasoned statements on his wound. In our next slide, we see, I just posted this morning, this is a guy I totally trust, an emergency room physician with extensive experience in war zones, who's also very aware of 9/11 truth and these other false flag issues. And so he says that this is not implausible. This wound, it's not a bullet. It's not a large caliber bullet entry and exit for sure. It's probably some kind of shrapnel wound. It could be a BB type of thing or a very small projectile like that, but it would be what you would expect from some kind of shrapnel. On the other hand, there are some questions about it. You can't tell for sure from this photo. You can't guarantee that it looks 100% exactly like what you would expect, blah, 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 because the photo doesn't give him enough information. But there is no reason from this photo and from the other evidence that we have about Mateshka to even question him, much less to accuse him, much less to give him hate stuff. Isn't our previous slide the one that shows the Guardian story about, you know, I hope someone shoots you. This person, whether they're an actual conspiracy theorist or a COINTELPRO person impersonating a conspiracy theorist, whoever is harassing him and insulting him like this, rather than just calling him up and talking to him normally like I did, these people are giving us a bad name, Tony. I'm really a bit upset about this.
Well, maybe I'm giving us a bad name. I don't know. But I know, we kind of started this on False Flag Weekly News. And I just threw in this story because, you know, I hadn't seen this picture, for instance, but it just seemed unlikely the way he was talking, and there was no physical evidence of a head wound, and he's talking about a bullet going into his head and coming out of the head, or it could be interpreted that way. I think what this demonstrates is we need a lot more nuance and different kind of categories. This crisis actor concept, like as if you either are or you aren't, and, you know, there's nothing in between. I must say, I was a little suspicious when I immediately saw he had a PayPal wall up. So he gets whatever happens to him, and there he is, and he's got $26,000 coming into PayPal because he's a victim of this kind of thing.
Well, he's doing better than False Flag Weekly News, that's
for
sure.
But the idea that, you know, he's just involved in a fraud, like, who's to say that there wasn't some kind of technology taking place to do this kind of injury to people, so that you would have, you know, crisis people feeling assaulted. You know, shrapnel is one explanation, but there could be an actual some kind of shooting device to cause people
a BB or maybe a
limited kind of wound. So, but I know that, you know, there are real deaths in this matter. like four Canadians call him a dig at Jasper. You know, the community is devastated there. Klimchuk, you know, there are people who I think it's overwhelming the case that they've been actually killed. So Matechka, how do you say it?
I think it's Matechka.
Matechka. I would suggest that, you know, we rather than simply saying it's either crisis actor you are or you aren't, that there are all kinds of possible variations that this false flag terrorism can, you know, it's a work in progress. And he may be the victim of, you know, some stage managed event, or at least a useful instrument of a stage managed event. And he has no consciousness that he is, you know, been set up for this, that he actually did. So anyway, I'm just putting it out that we need to be nuanced in how we talk about these things.
Well, yeah, but it is a question. There is a question of crisis actor you are or you aren't. And he isn't. You know, I mean, unless somebody comes up with some very, you know, convincing evidence, we have to assume he isn't. You're innocent until proven guilty, and there's no reason to think this guy's guilty. So on that question, we have to be clear. But yeah, sure, it looks like some kind of false flag, a typical Gladio event. And did they really shoot people during Operation Gladio? Ask the survivors of the Brabant Belgium massacres in the shopping areas. Of course they do. So yeah, of course he's the victim of an event that's been choreographed and so on. But he's still a guy who got shot in Las Vegas. So, you know, whatever. Anyway,
how do you see the PayPal? How do you see the PayPal wall?
Well, people raise money through crowdfunding for everything these days, Tony. We do it here at False Flag Weekly News. And this guy, he's not a rich guy. I talked to the place where he works. He's like a working class guy. And, you know, a normal working class guy who got injured at Las Vegas is very likely to do that. I mean, why not? I mean, come on.
And good for you for picking up the phone and following up on it. And people were really interested in this story. It was educational to me to see how this sort of caught fire on False Flag Weekly News comment section. So keep those comments coming in, folks. And that, for all we know, had a big role in sort of leading to this condemnation that somehow people saying you're a crisis actor and condemning him, they're doing hate speech and this whole hate, you know.
No, they're doing stupid speech.
Well, anyway, they're giving an opening for this propaganda where you just invoke this term hate speech. That means we can censor you. That means you're, you know, you don't have citizens' rights. That means you can't speak because you're doing something awful. You're doing hate. And we see the people who are really experts on hate speech are often the ones deciding who's going to be designated as.
Well, that's right. And I wouldn't be surprised, Tony, if this whole thing, this wasn't sparked by False Flag Weekly News. You just picked up on a YouTube that had a lot of views. That YouTube, however, with its views, with its comments, that could be orchestrated. Somebody started seeding those comments and, you know, the rest took off and they used this as anti-conspiracy theory propaganda. Let's go back, go to Iran. We only have 12 minutes left and we've only been through a little more than half the stories. Here we have the U.S. on a collision course with Iran, says the Washington Post. We talked about that a lot last week. And yes, we did False Flag Weekly News, a special report last week. It's not in the normal location, though. People have to find that by way of my YouTube channel. Go to truthjihad.com, click on the YouTube link, and you'll find that. Anyway, next
slide. I'm going to suggest that Alan Reese is going to put that up on No Life Radio.
He'll put it in the regular place.
Two for one sale this week, ladies and gentlemen, two new False Flag Weekly News episodes. Actually, the one just hasn't been seen on No Lies Radio, but
okay. And people can also, people can find it at my Patreon page. Just go to Patreon, Patreon, and look for my name. Dr. Kevin Barrett is what I am there. Anyway, here we are in Iran. This is this crazy attempt to blame Iran for 9/11. Kristen Breitweiser slices and dices it, even though she's kind of sort of accepting some of the official story. She talks about hijackers, not alleged hijackers, but it's still an interesting piece. And of course, that Hezbollah bandana that was planted in Shanksville may be resurrected now to try to blame Iran.
Yeah, I mean, we've had one real trial on 9/11 with victims' families going against Iran and like Iran is the enemy of Al-Qaeda and Daesh and ISIL, the type of Islamic terrorists who were told supposedly did 9/11, etc. So this is not a sane approach to 9/11 to start looking through Iran. It's part of the build-up, the Likudnik instigated build-up to war with Iran that we're presently seeing.
James Petras just did a great piece on that
too. Traction. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that. Anyway, I'm going to talk to James Petras about that great new piece. Anyway, war on Trump news. Clinton team and the Democrats bankrolled the dirty dossier, supposedly featuring Trump urinating on Obama's bed or something like that with a bunch of whatever, weird Russian prostitutes. Well, that was all paid for by Hillary. And Jimmy Carter in the next slide says that he didn't vote for Hillary in the primary. He voted for Bernie Sanders, just like I did. And basically he throws cold water on this establishment attempt to lynch Trump and to elevate Hillary.
Let's just keep this page here, this photograph of these former U.S. presidents. The only one in that sequence who isn't there is Ronald Reagan, who's passed away. But isn't it an interesting demonstration that in the United States, the person, you know, ordering all the murders of this group and that group and doing the deep state things, you know, they all end up made in the shade, you know, no criminal charges. There they are, the team, and all looking rather healthy and well protected. U.S. is pretty good about protecting those at the top.
It sure is. And they're protecting them from war crimes charges relating to many wars, including, next slide, the war in Afghanistan, where the Phoenix Program 2.0, Phoenix being the genocidal program against Vietnamese villagers, is being unleashed on Afghanistan. So that's pretty ugly news. And in the next slide, we see that Bo Bergdahl, the soldier accused of doing something wrong by quote-unquote deserting this genocidal criminal war of aggression in Afghanistan, should be given the Medal of Honor. He is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, heroes in American history, if indeed his reason for stepping out of that criminal war was his understanding that he was participating in aggression, the supreme war crime.
And he mentions that when he was a captive of the Taliban, they were kind of decent to him and actually talked to him as a human and explained to him real stuff that was happening around him. Whereas when he is under the auspices of the U.S. military, people don't tell you what's going on and they lie to you. And so this is taken as the entry point to this story, the way the mainstream covers it, that, oh, this crazy kook here says that the Taliban are actually more honest than.
You know, that's what everybody says. Who's, you know, that's what. What's her name? From the UK. I'm forgetting her name. The journalist who was captured by the Taliban after she snuck into Afghanistan right around the time of the U.S. invasion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that a lot of people say the Taliban are gentlemen. Who knows? Anyway, let's move on to Jewish state. That is the Jewish equivalent of Islamic State, otherwise known as the Zionist entity occupying Palestine. They're also occupying Houston. You can't get flood relief unless you promise never to boycott Israel. Talk about Zionist arrogance and chutzpah. This is carrying it a little too far, don't you think?
I mean, it's actually written into the policy that those who, if you're going to get money for flood relief, you can't have a position on BDS. You know, our friend in Jasper has ideas and positions, and suddenly you can't be a member of the Environmental Association and the Fiddlers Association. And
if you have Canadian any ideas, you can't teach at the University of Lethbridge, Tony. And well, maybe you can. We'll find out.
If you offend this particular lobby, you know, there's no limits to the recriminations that will be put on you, oftentimes just by citizens who are so torqued and spun that they think they're doing something, you know, positive for humanity by transforming this or that agency into a thought policing agency for
speaking of Zionist thought police, Tony, here we have Palestinian guy arrested for a Facebook translation error. He said good morning in Arabic, and the translation in Hebrew came up as attack them. So I guess that artificial intelligence over in Israel isn't working so well. And so they busted him, but it's all been sorted out now. I hope he wasn't too badly tortured for saying good morning. And then we have this new website, Tony, Forward March, saying that Islamic extremism is not the real problem. The real problem is Jewish extremism. Are we allowed to say that? Everybody says Islamic extremism. Are we allowed to even acknowledge that there is such a thing as Jewish extremism? I would think we should be.
Well, this group of journalists here is a very interesting array of supposedly the authors of this Forward March article, including Shabazz, which was the name of Malcolm X, including Claire Hoy, including Ostrovsky, you know, the Mossad agent who went public. And, you know, it's a strange group of authors. They seem to be Canadian-based, many of them. And the idea of this article is they make a distinction between neo-Nazism and National Socialism in Germany. And basically they're saying this neo-Nazism is an instrument of Israeli manipulation, and they have a lot of neo-Nazi types in Israel, supporting, for instance, the Jewish, the English Defense League, in Great Britain, and it is a kind of neo-Nazi approach, which is sort of head-banging and, you know, being useful for creation of illusion and polarization and, you know, divisions of different sorts. So I find that a very interesting analysis, and of course puts it in this history in a different light than what we usually get.
Well, it does. And speaking of seeing things in a different light, how about our next story as we enter the odds and ends category? I did an interview with Peter Myers about the Harvey Weinstein affair, as it were. And the one part that nobody ever talks about was mentioned by a story in, not the Forward, it was a different Jewish publication.
The Tablet
magazine. Yeah, yeah. So it's basically pointing out that Harvey Weinstein was working out his weird psychological problem or hatred of non-Jewish people by degrading non-Jewish women. All of his victims practically were non-Jewish. And so a Tablet explained that. So getting into this sort of cultural Jewish versus Christian kind of thing that's lurking in the shadows of this Weinstein affair is really interesting. And Peter Myers got into that. And then I'm going to be talking about that on the radio show.
Can I get in on that? No?
Sure, go for it.
Yeah. Well, the article is called, and this is me citing the Tablet article, not me saying my own words, the specifically Jewy perviness of Harvey Weinstein. What an interesting title for a magazine or a website written primarily by Jews for Jews in that context. And yes, there is this view that, what are his fantasies? And his fantasies are getting some kind of revenge on sheikhs, and now he's in a position to seduce sheikhs, non-Jewish women. Anyway, it's a very kind of strange cultural analysis going on here, and it really does lend itself to the kind of broader discussion which you have had, Kevin.
Okay, and that will be a topic of debate on tonight's radio show. We have a critic of the Peter Myers approach. Peter Myers is a critic of what he would consider a certain element of the Jewish community's influence on Western popular culture. He's a little bit on the same line as Michael Jones, but we're going to have a guest tonight on my radio show that who will argue against that. He's from a Jewish background himself, who thinks that Peter Myers is barking up the wrong tree. So that's going to be an interesting show tonight. People can find that by way of my website, truthjihad.com. Click on the radio link.
You mean the breakdown of Christian family values, Kevin, might have something to do with Hollywood? And
well, we will debate that tonight.
Okay,
we got to whip through these stories. We have exactly 1 minute left to do five stories, so let's see if we can do it. Okay, Tillerson says Iraq's Shia militia must go home. Wait a minute, maybe Iraq is saying Tillerson, maybe America needs to go home.
Yes, those Iraqis, what are they doing in Iraq?
Yeah, really, go home, Iraqis, go home somewhere
and,
else.
Of course, we're beneath staying. It all is that the Islamic Republic of Iran has proxy armies and friendly allied forces through that area. And That makes Tillerson nervous.
Well, they're probably friendlier to Iran than they are to the United States. Why would that be? Because the United States destroyed Iraq, maybe. Anyway, how about Venezuela, where Chavismo is in triumph? They won the regional elections. The other side has not a leg to stand on, basically nothing to say. Bravo to the heirs of Hugo Chavez.
Viva Hugo Chavez.
Viva Chavez. Okay. Good comment, Tony. That was terse, succinct, said a lot with very few words and so on and so forth. Okay. Moving on to Hollywood.
As an exception.
You submitted this story, Tony. Extreme weather alert. We have a geostorm, a movie called Geostorm that I never heard of because it was such a box office flop. But Tony thinks it's important. Why is it important, Tony?
Well, it's interesting that it's a box office flop. It's lost $100 million. No, just give me a chance here. And but the plot of the it's basically a pro geoengineering story. So there's all of this geoengineering up in space that the climate is being controlled. We're seeing a very intelligent group of highly sophisticated technocrats, you know, running the climate of the Earth. And then some Darth Vader, some bad guy, gets hold of the codes, and he's going to create the basis for a geostorm. All the storms of the world will combine and destroy the planet.
A perfect storm.
Yeah, but you know, the interesting thing is, as you're watching all of this, the assumption is that's a good thing to put stuff up in space and control the weather. That's what we should be doing. That's what intelligent, wise people do. And we know geoengineering isn't just a prospect in the future, or HARP isn't a that, you know, our climate is being engineered in different ways. And this is in the present tense, and it's been going on for a long time. So here is Hollywood sort of selling us, you know, an extension of this technology. But then somebody gets the code, and suddenly we're in the realm of IA, artificial intelligence. And we see that, you know, the whole world is dependent upon who gets the code for this and who gets the code for that. And this IA world, this artificial intelligence world coming up, this is a nightmare, man. This is, you know, the disempowerment of humanity and losing our agency. And we cannot be lured into this. So it sort of gives the downside of IA and the upside of weather modification. And it's interesting in that respect. And the fact that people don't want to go and see it.
I would agree with them on part of it. You know, I'm with them hating IA. But I'm not a big fan of geoengineering. Anyway, Ingrid Zundel just passed away not long after her husband Ernst. And whatever you may think about their ideas, and I don't agree with all of them, but I'm not sure they're wrong about everything either. You have to admit that these people suffered under horrendous persecution for upholding free speech and free inquiry.
This was obviously the loves of their lives. They found a great deal of friendship and solace in working together. And RIP, both of you.
Okay. Well, maybe they're in Jannah, the paradise as we Muslims see it. Or maybe they're in the big UFO up in the sky. You know, God's universe is great, and maybe paradise can manifest in different ways. They were into UFOs. Ernst, you know, I said I wasn't on the same page with them on many things, and I didn't understand their UFOs under the South Pole thing. But, hey, what do I know? Anyway, we just got this news from the former manager of the Department of Defense Aerospace Threat Program that UFOs are real. Whether the Air Force exists is another question.
Well, a former defense minister in Canada, Paul Hellyer, has been talking about this as being real. You know, there's some very influential, well-grounded people who talk about these programs and how things are being hidden from us. I've done a class on this subject. I actually introduced it into my university curriculum at the University of Lethbridge. And I just simply called it Worthy of Your Consideration. I'm not saying this is the case. I'm not saying, but Disney did a full story on extraterrestrials coming to the Earth after the blowing up of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They don't like, supposedly in the larger universe, atomic ignitions. It affects other realms, so we're told. Anyway, how we're going to deal with this story? I mean, I myself was condemning Robert David Steele just recently when he said, you know, well, we're sending sex slave kids up to Mars, and you know, that seems pretty extraordinary. But, you know, on the other hand, this is only the local solar system. You know, is it, if there is communication, it goes far beyond that. I think we have to deal with this. We have to address this. I'm not sure how.
Okay, well, we'll have a week to think about it, and then we'll be back next week, assuming that we haven't been kidnapped by ETs or other malevolent forces. So, inshallah, see you then. I'm Kevin Barrett with Tony Hall. Take care and God bless.